Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God damn, I just spent $8,000 on f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Hey, welcome back, everybody.
Hey, guys, welcome back.
Welcome back to Breaking the Cork. Today is a special episode, part two of the episode with Victoria.
Yep, we went for a very long discussion and we decided to do two parts of it.
So we continue the discussion with Victoria Sharples, the head of wine, group head of wine, actually, of Fallow Restaurant and Row. Another subject, because we were talking about the service in restaurant, etc. Something which is very important now in a service in a restaurant is the glassware. And you also bring us three beautiful glasses. Do you want to talk about these glasses? I love them. They're really nice.
I'm very glad.
Yeah.
Just as well. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had any champagne.
Yeah.
So these are, and I may have... I think you saw that reel where I had a bit of a... I think I need like a special what gets my goat or some sort of hashtag of what really annoys me. Stemware, because it's called stemware now, not glassware, it's stemware. Let's remember, because they have stems. Yes, I brought these, which is a little baby stem. And it's one whole piece.
It's not welded.
It is. There are no... little...
How would you say that? You wouldn't say welding, obviously, because that's for metal.
No, joints. Joint.
Is it so joined?
A lot of wine glasses are in two or three pieces.
Yep. Yeah.
And as soon as you start polishing glasses, the natural tendency is to twist and snap goes the stem.
Yeah.
But also a long stem, it's easy to knock over on a table, putting it into any kind of glass washer, dishwasher at home, wherever. It's so easy for them to topple, snap, and...
Of course.
It does my head in. Mm. These are my favorite glasses. I have been using this or the previous iteration for about, 20 years. Does that sound like it?
Two years.
A couple of years now.
2 months.
So back in Australia, I bought the last of them. So these are Schott's Wiesel. Okay. I'm not being paid for this, just so we're clear. I'm a huge fan of their glassware. And they apparently were part of the Riedel family originally. There was a splintering off. Now, I may have some of that wrong, but I'm not so fussed about the history. It's more about what the glass is. It's a bit like a wine.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a lovely history and story, but for me, it's what's in the glass or what the glass is.
Okay, yeah.
And so, for me, I brought these. Yes, when I had my bar, I finally was able to get these stem. I'm like, oh, fantastic. I can have the glasses that I want to share with people and to show what I think is a great all-rounder glass. And as you see, I use it for champagne, sparkling. I use this glass for everything.
Okay.
Sweet wines, reds, whites, the works.
Everything.
It's my standard all-rounder. And this is all I have at home.
Do you want to tell how many you've
bought? Not because I have a lot of them, but
I think
love
it's important to say how many you've bought.
She can supply a lot of restaurants.
Not anymore, but when I... So when I discovered...
They were going to stop it.
When I was setting up my bar, a restaurant, I thought, oh, fantastic, I can get hold of these glasses. And I rang the supplier and they said, oh, no, they've been discontinued.
Hmm.
And the sound that came out of my mouth was significant. And I thought, oh, for God's sake, of all the one time that I... And I'm like, no, you have to find these for me. And they were able to find about five pallets.
Five
pallets. There's a lot of glasses.
Wait, how many glasses it is in five pallets?
So it's six glasses in a box. It sounds more than five pallets of wine. It was sort of smaller, but they were all delivered on five pallets. So they're quite big boxes that hold them.
Is it at least 5,000 glasses?
There may have been about... there was several thousand.
Okay.
Nice. I still have some available. For details. Yeah, but I love them. And so I use them at my bar. A couple of other bars and restaurants have taken some of them as well. But I just love them because as a solid single piece, they're also the technology. I now sound like an advertisement. The technology they use, they're guaranteed for 1,000 washes not to go cloudy. And we know in London, glasses go cloudy.
Oh, God,
it's particularly a problem here than they were in
Australia.
Yeah. But I just find These are great because everything tastes good.
Okay. Very easy to handle.
Really easy. Yeah. I mean, I just brought them one in a handbag and one in a little side. You know, they stick in a dishwasher. They're super friendly.
They sit well on my nose, I know.
Yeah. They do,
don't
they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's there's good opening, you know?
No, they're really nice.
But as I said, they discontinued them. And much like me, they were ahead of their time.
Yeah.
And the previous glass they had, which wasn't so angled, it was a more rounded. They stopped those too, but I bought all the rest of those back to Australia.
Do you remember how much you paid? Because, I mean, for people who don't know, like wine glasses are very expensive.
So this is a special, they have a special name for them, and I'm going to say titanium, that's not the right word, but there is a particular, the technology they use so it doesn't go cloudy.
Okay.
But these would have retailed at about 25 a stem.
25.
Retail.
Okay. Oh, wow. So 25 a glass retail price.
Yeah. So we're talking, you know, proper retail, I mean, we're not talking Zalto.
Yeah. Zalto is great.
Zalto has a place.
Yeah.
Sorry, Zalto, I'm going to be...
Sorry,
we love Zalto, but I will tell you a fun story. Mm-hmm. So when I was, and you can edit this out if you need to.
No, we don't edit anything.
So when I was over here studying my MW, we had to have our own glasses we'd bring every time, so it was consistent. And these weren't being made. I had the previous ones, but they're in Australia. I thought, okay, I'll find something here. And we went to Zalto and took a wine that we knew and tried a whole lot of different versions because you want to be able to understand a wine and make sure it's consistent every time. The glass I chose was the Zalto water glass.
Yeah, interesting.
Which was really interesting. But, so it pulled everything. So I could identify every single thing. So I knew, the wine that I knew, then I'd try it through these, it gave me the best result. But then when I tried the wine, it was almost complicating it for me, and I complicate things enough, so that was one step too far because I could find everything, but I couldn't bring it together. So then I ended up ditching those and using a glass that I was using at the Wine Challenge. So I was able to acquire some of theirs, which were a far more, not an ISO, but more of a Chianti glass, this is not dissimilar in shape.
Yeah, nice. Difference.
But I like the fineness. It's not too fine.
Yeah,
I don't feel like if I look at it, I'm going to break it. And I don't look if I hold the stem too firmly, it'll snap.
That's
where I have this issue. Anything that,
it feels good.
Beer would look amazing in there as well.
Yeah. I mean, they do a very similar beer glass. And
especially
people look at that
there,
and think it's beer. Yeah. But for me, I will drink all my wines in this glass.
Still? The water glasses they have is a bit similar on this
very
one.
Very similar. Yeah, that's that would be the closest cousin. So if I had to go and find more, I'd probably go to them because no one is doing, they're not doing short stems.
No.
And I think it's crazy because it's the most practical, particularly in a restaurant setting. Because if you have a table, anything that's too high, it's so easy to knock.
Yeah.
Whether it's, guests or staff, and then it's a washing, the drying, and unless you're using Winterhalter that does all the special clever things where you don't actually need to polish the glasses, my God, it does sound like a commercial, doesn't it? But, if I see a restaurant with too many fancy glasses, I will walk away.
Why?
Because the glasses, they've probably been given them, but I just think it's too fancy for the difference. And I know when Riedel, originally, many years ago, when Riedel introduced, they did the black tasting glass.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a trade fair out there.
In the countryside?
Excel.
Okay.
Yeah, countryside, yeah.
Excel is almost a countryside.
Excel, in East London. And you could have there was a competition and you could try and taste what the wine was and guess it. And you could win yourself a black tasting glass. What was interesting about that is that you couldn't tell if it was red or white wine.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is that colour is such a perception.
Yeah.
But where was I going with that? I was going somewhere and I went completely sideways. Damn it. But when prior to that, I had a friend who went to a Riedel tasting and it was all the different glasses. And this was probably 20 years ago and even at the time we're going, what, seriously? And you had your burgundy shape, but it was all about the science of how the wine is delivered onto your palate because every glass will deliver it slightly differently. And so whether it's their Sauvignon Blanc glass versus a Chardonnay versus then they'll have there's a Syrah versus a, there was a Syrah which was much deeper. And then there would have been more of a Rhone glass, which
is the Burgundy was a bit more Burgundy square.
Burgundy is much more ballooned.
Yeah, balloon or square?
Balloon.
It's the balloon. Okay. Yeah.
So Pinot and Chardonnay, they go more balloon, so you get more air. But it's how the wine is actually delivered onto your tongue. So one is the fragrance, the aromats, but then it's what how it delivers, and it is an absolute science. And I just think one, I will always be slightly cynical. You look at how much space you need to keep track of all those glasses, and frankly, if you don't have those, what if you've got a wine that is this crazy blend? Where do you, where it's a bit like, where does it go on the wine list? Which wine glass do you use? Then do you do a comparison? Oh, actually, this is the best glass for those wines. So if I need an all rounder, this is perfect.
To be fair, for the thing is like for a very classic restaurant, these glasses that you brought, perfect, nice. After, to be fair, I can understand in like in a Michelin restaurant or like fine dining that they have a special type of glass for every, because the experience is not the same, the path is not the same, maybe they have only 20 sitting, so the sommelier have more time, you
this
know,
is
for
true.
Each table,
and there's more, and we would assume that the wine selection will be more there'll be a lot more fine wine, and some of them may have more age on them, they might be buying at auction, buying some really interesting wine, and so, and that's where what you read all established that every glass style will actually deliver a very different experience. And if you try a Pinot Noir in a Syrah glass versus the Pinot Noir glass, it tastes completely different. So the fruit goes.
Really? You it can see the difference?
Yeah, I've tried it. And it's like, holy shit.
It's like, that's very interesting.
Wow,
no,
it's
it is.
Really. Yeah, I actually thought about bringing some other glasses, but I didn't have any to compare. But it is, it's really interesting. If you try one varietal in different glasses,
okay.
It is, yeah, it's really telling. So okay. I don't diss them, but I think for more regular, everyday, casual, until you get into that really high end, you don't need all of that. And I'll probably get shot tomorrow, but I'll see what happens.
Oh, that's true. And what do you think, we're going very deep as well, but of the restaurant who serve like one, for example, I think the big chain is Franco Manca. They serve the wine in glasses like that, small glasses like that.
Like the small,
small round ones, canteens.
Look, it's that classic. If you have a wine that you do not care about, that you just want something, let's say red and smooth, that will go with your pizza or whatever it may be, and you want something sort of rich and full, you can probably drink it out of
a
Vegemite
wine
glass. It's a table wine. And there's a charm to that. But when you're starting to invest in, you know, a carefully considered wine program, i.e. selection of wines, whether you're shipping it direct, whether you're buying it from others, I think it pays to, you know, have a glass that works.
Completely.
Appropriate glasses for the appropriate wine list.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't need, I mean, and some of the most fun times can be drinking wine out of your little coffee glass.
It's, you know what, sometimes it's actually the best moments when you're having like a very good wine in like a very shitty glasses, you know, outside.
But then you might think, God, imagine how it would, I mean, come on, sideways comes to mind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, out of a plastic glass.
Yeah.
I guess like, holy crap, you know, that's the worst thing. It's absolutely, you know, this is.
I've had, I had a friend from Zimbabwe that I met. She was a customer in a hotel bar that I used to work, and we kind of spoke and got quite amical, I would say, friendly.
Friendly.
So she was a mom of two who was coming to see her kids to swimming in the UK, and she was on her own, so served her, and she loves champagne, absolutely loves champagne, and she was there for like a week basically, and we got to know her, me and my missus and I, we got to know her more and more, and then we went out one night in a club, and she was like, I'll buy a bottle of champagne, okay, and we were like in a very gritty club, you know, one of those in Manchester where it's like, you know,
gritty,
the worst gin you can have, the worst vodka, whatever. And then she was like, yeah, I'm going to buy champagne. And she bought the only champagne there, it was Veuve Clicquot. But when she got the bottle, it was all dusty. And they gave us plastic cups, you know, those long plastic cups.
You know?
And she was like, who cares, we're out on the night out, you know, and she opened it, it didn't even pop or anything, just like that.
It was already still wine at that time.
And yeah, she just poured it, there was like no more bubbles, and you know, even though she loved like really good wine, and she's very like into her wine, she has a wine shop in actually in Zimbabwe, and she's an importer, she still went like, you know,
it doesn't have to be fancy.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't.
Who cares? We're having a good time.
But this is the thing about hospitality, wine. It's all about joviality and being and having fun and enjoyment.
Completely.
And if you get so up your own ass, you've lost. I think you've lost the message.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
And that's funny because most of the time, I don't know about you too, but sometimes the best experience you have in hospitality is like in a restaurant where you didn't expect anything.
Yeah.
About the food, the service, the one list, and actually you leave, you still have some stars in, you know, in your eyes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you have like the best experience ever and you didn't expect anything, but it was all perfect. Which sometimes with like very big Michelin restaurant, you have so much expectation. That sometimes you never disappointed. It's very rare.
Itself. Yeah.
Exactly. You're still happy about it, but your expectation was so high that you're happy, but nothing more. I mean, it's like you're still missing a bit of...
And I think that's something that, you know, I am a pain in the ass, without question. And you sort of have a certain standard. You want something just normal. And beyond that is great. But, yeah, when you have those expectations and they're not met, it's like, yeah, it was fine. Would you go back? Probably not. But it's those ones that are under the radar that are like, oh. And it can literally be sitting on the beach... drinking, you know, okay, we're not talking restaurants now, but it's more about just the experience.
Of course, yeah.
And you know what? Most of the time, I feel like it's people. You know?
For sure.
Yeah, it's people. All about
the one list, the thing is like, well, food is important as well. Is this food in the, if it's like a restaurant? A one list can always, you can always find something interesting on a one list, I feel like.
You'd hope so. Oh, I don't, oh.
Did you already find a one list which was absolutely nothing interesting?
I have.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask for which restaurant.
No, but I'm going to say there are a lot of pubs at the moment that are dumbing down their wine list. And and it hurts my soul because I like going to a pub. I don't really drink beer, but I want to eat, whether it's pizza, and there's loads of pubs doing great pizzas now.
Yeah.
But you want a nice glass of wine.
Yeah.
And hard. When I have the absolute detritus of wine available, where I will pay them, I'll say, I will pay the same price as your house wine to drink something decent, because there are some wines that I have had that are literally undrinkable.
Yep.
And I have, well, I can't think where it was, which is probably a good thing, but I have bought two different glasses of red. It may have been a Rhone and something else. And I've blended them to make a better wine. I blend wine.
Yeah.
I have been several places where I've gone, holy, this is, you know, when you sort of like your ponytail goes up and it's like, oh my, you know what? No. When suddenly, you know, it's sort of like that cartoon, it's like, holy, like, what the hell is that awful stuff? How did that get into a bottle? There is an opportunity that I will buy a couple of different glasses and blend them to make a better glass.
Yeah, but also like pub, I was more talking about restaurant wine bars. Sorry. Pub for me, it's very difficult because now you got this huge amount of like very nice pub, a mix of fancy and cool, a bit hype, like the Pelican or Diero in Notting Hill and Medieval.
I don't think there's so enough cool pubs that do.
There's not
that,
enough.
That take care of their menu, wine menu at least.
Also, I don't call this a one list. When there's three white, three red, three rosé, for me, it's not a one list.
No, no, but that's what we're saying.
You put some wine because you need wine.
I think pubs need to pay a bit more attention to wine and stop thinking about buying the cheapest wine to make the biggest margins. Because
could not agree more.
Yeah, and more and more people are drinking non-alcoholic beer, but, I mean, because I can't get a good glass of wine, I don't want a beer sometimes.
True. But do you think the majority of the customers of a pub, do you think they really want wine?
Yeah, I'd say yes in a way, but then you have some big brands of pubs are made for this kind of crowd, and then you have, you know, the local pubs but still, you know, serving shit wine.
Yeah.
And I think if they had good wine, I see my parents whenever we go, you know, I take them to a pub.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, fuck, yeah. You know, oh, this is going to be
disgusting. You're isolating a whole section of the market.
Yeah.
Because not everyone does drink beer.
Exactly.
And a lot of people actually don't drink.
And if they're going no and low, or you go for beer, if you're either into all the IPAs or versus a lager, okay. But if you, some people don't want that.
Yeah.
Especially if there are intolerances, blah, blah, blah. It's not difficult to have two good wines on the list.
Completely.
One red, one white, and one rosé, and it doesn't, and it should not be something that is high streety,
yep,
well-known brand. It has to be something from maybe a classic region at a good price. It doesn't have to be 24 quid or £30. You can pay a little bit more, but have something on the list as a 175, not a 125 mil. Don't get me started. Because the difference is, you know, there is nothing more disappointing, because I won't go those places where I've had really rubbish wine that hurt my soul and my palate. Yeah, they just hurt.
Oh yeah,
I'm not going back.
It's like vinegar.
There.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, there have been pubs that have great, you know, food that I may have, you know, bootlegged something in there and gone, and I said, look, I'll pay you. I want to drink my wine.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
I think the problem for this kind of businesses like the pub and pub with like big brand pub, I don't think they can really choose the selection of the wine.
Well, I know they think it's about money.
They have like the big headquarter with like the buyers, and they buy the wine for like the 100-150 pubs of the country, and you have to choose between your little list which one is not the worst one.
There are huge limitations, and you know, I think you pubs are, and one of the charms of moving and living in the UK is the pub culture here.
Yeah,
you know, a Sunday roast is, you know,
it's part of no the one else.
Exactly, but I think they're doing themselves a disservice, and I understand, you know, the buying limitations. What they are, this comes from, you know, this is upper management issues where this goes into a whole business conversation.
Yeah.
Because they won't see, you know, what they can save and what they can make. And they're, oh, you know, we buy this for £5 and we can charge 35.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're making a huge margin, but people aren't necessarily going to drink it again. And if you spend that little bit more and make a slightly less margin, or even just you charge a bit, still make a margin, this day and age, people are... Wine consumers are, they have knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, they are not ignorant. You know, there's a lot of knowledge, and there are a lot of places where you can learn.
And there's all the people who drink wine that doesn't go to the pub. I mean, include myself. Yeah. I go less and less to pubs because they don't have good wine.
Yeah.
And I would love to go more to pubs because I only go to wine shops, wine bars, and I'd like to diversify. But the problem is, I know I'm going to be drinking beer, and I'll drink one beer, fair enough. But then a second, it's just too much now.
It gets too bloaty.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, well, beer is a beer, and a good beer is a good beer. But at the end of the day, like, it's not as, how would you say it, as appreciative than a wine.
I'm sure there'll be a few people who may disagree with you on that.
100% they will.
100%. No, for sure. But there's also one, like, pub now who are doing wine on tap, even like one bar. Yes. I know we talked a bit about that before.
And you can have good wine on tap, but there's an awful lot of shit wine on tap.
Yeah.
And there is no excuse.
Yeah, but isn't it like the kind of like the same thing for wine in general? There's a lot of really good wine and there's a lot of shitty wine.
Oh my God, there's so much. Yeah. And you know, judging, I see stuff and go, why do they put it in a bottle?
Yeah.
I know why they've submitted it. It's like, no, if it's not right, and I don't know, look, maybe I just give people too much kudos that they'll actually be intelligent about it.
Yeah.
And I understand that there are financial pressures and this all come across as being very simplistic. But if it's a shit wine, if it's rubbish, doesn't matter, you cannot polish a...
No, but when you see... The crazy thing is like when you see a wine in the supermarket for like £6 and you think about that, it's a wine from Australia. So you had the transport, you have the cost of the bottle, the cost of the wine, the cost of the importer. The margin is included in the £5-6
of
the supermarket. And the people who make the wine, I don't want to imagine just the costs of the wine and the grapes. It would be like ridiculous.
But this is the issue, is when you're looking at that sort of level, is if that's when you're transporting in a bladder. So you're not doing by bottle, so it's being bottled in the UK, which by default means that you're going to have more sulfur in those wines because they have to sulfur it before it ships. When it lands, it has to be sulfured again in case of any spoilage, and then they sulfur again before bottling.
Soon they'll do like Zara, you know, when they'll bottle the wine in the boat.
In store.
Yeah, yeah.
On the way, they'll bottle it, you know.
Between the border.
Yeah, add a little bit of sea salt water in there just to, you know.
Maybe a good thing actually for listeners, what, for example, like if you don't know much about wine, but you want to buy a wine like from, so again, I'm going to say it, but like if you can buy your wine from a wine shop, do it. It's always better, even if you can support like a small businesses. But if you want to buy your wine in a supermarket, what kind of advice you give? Like, don't go under £10 or like certain labels.
Okay, so I would normally say, stay above £10. However,
oula.
And now, my God, it's like sponsored by
Penfold.
No, a friend of mine has just set up his own wine brand and is creating a wine, making it. It's a French rosé.
See, friends of yours.
I know, again, it's a friend.
Sponsor.
But it astounded me because he actually just did a reel the other day. And because I tried it a little while ago and says, Vic, you are the most difficult person. I'm terrified to give you for you to taste this wine. And I was like, okay. And I'll actually probably be harsher on people that I know, especially if they're, I'm like, oh, you know, it's bloody good. And on special, on promotion, it's £8 a bottle. Oh, wow. So that made me think, hold on a moment, you can get really good wine at that price. But that confuses your question. God damn it. But I think, I mean, under £5, all you're getting is essences.
Sugars
and you're getting essence and sugar and not much else.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if people are not used to wine and they need an entry point into wine, those wines aren't a bad thing. Because at least taste drinking that rather than some other product, but it's going to have more sugar, it's going to have a lot more sort of, it's going to be very overt and obvious without necessarily a lot of grape characteristics. It's actually it's an easy question but very difficult to answer.
It is.
It really is, because I think there are wines that I'd occasionally go into a supermarket and find some good stuff. But then there's also some that are so sweet and so jammy, and I may as well just be drinking Ribena.
A good example, Chocolate Block.
Never had it. But people love it.
Yeah, it's good, it's okay. But it's still £20, so it's not cheap for a supermarket wine.
Really?
But it's really a thing. And it's in supermarket. But it's mainly, I think, in Waitrose. So it's like, it's a premium supermarket.
But then if you're going to talk about that and Waitrose, and I loved and found range, they do, which they do a small parcel of a grape that no one's ever heard of, and they're all under a tenner. And those wines are fantastic, but it's a small run. Those I was really impressed with. I think M&S are doing a similar thing. So there are supermarkets doing exciting, interesting, where you can spend less, but you have to, you're not going at the gondola and just grabbing whatever's on special.
Yeah, of course.
Lidl in France, I don't know much about in UK, but in France, I know sometimes they're doing like special selection. They're buying like one or two pallets.
Yeah.
And they're saying this, and it's really good value. Yeah.
Lidl has a reputation in the UK as well, sometimes to have some good wines. But
yeah. They do. There's some great wines.
Yeah.
Which is
nice. Quite funny, but I mean, it's great in that sense.
And just to come back to Waitrose, to be fair, Waitrose, I feel like they have a pretty good selection.
They do.
Pretty solid.
Sponsored by.
Send the check.
Waitrose and partnership.
Send the money, Waitrose. No, but they do have a really good selection, to be fair, but also it's a very expensive supermarket. So obviously...
It isn't.
It's kind of... It's not cheap,
There's
though.
A perception, and I think I can spend less there at other more... If we're mentioning Waitrose versus, say, Tesco, I will spend less at Waitrose than I would at Tesco.
Really?
Yeah. Or Sainsbury's. Wow. Oh, my God. Shall I list them all? Waitrose is really expensive.
Yeah.
But actually, for many things, they're not.
Completely agree. Yeah. Should we have a little taste of the
That little bit
Burgundy.
A little bit of Burgundy. Yeah. Sure. Did we like the champagne, by the way?
The champagne was amazing.
Is it yummy?
It's really good.
Really delicate. Bit of honey. Yeah. There's some finesse to it.
Exactly, yeah. I think it was like an easy drinking one. But beautiful.
But what's interesting about this, it's Pinot Noir dominant.
Oh, okay.
Even though it presents more as a Chardonnay.
Yeah, but it's Pinot
and
Noir.
It doesn't taste that much on the... I mean, I do love the Pinot Meunier in Champagne.
I hate it.
It's too thin.
No way.
It's too thin, you know. There's people love it and people hate it.
Sorry, that was a strong... Yeah.
It was very strong.
And when I visited Geraldine and we tasted all their wines when I was importing to Oz, and then we went to my favourite little brasserie in Reims and their wine wasn't there. I'm like, oh. And so I had, oh my God, what's the number wine? They always have a number, like number 731.
Jackson?
Jackson. And they have Pinot Meunier in there. Oh my God, it stood out like the proverbial. It was really amazing. But there's this muddiness that Pinot Meunier gives.
Yeah.
And it can really work in a champagne.
Yeah.
And I've seen still red on its own, which is delicious. Sparkling. But it's an early
wine. Like some Coteau Champenois, you mean?
Yeah, it ripens early. It's a nice little... It's a bit of a stocking filler.
Mm, okay.
But for my palate, it was that experience. Like, oh, my God. Suddenly I knew exactly what Meunier tasted like. And it
to be fair, Jacques-Wan is also like very good quality champagne.
It's very good. I could see the Meunier. Sorry, Jackson. We love you too.
So shall we try this sponsored... it's not.
This is a Mercury Blanc, which is... Less than 20% of Mercury is made of Chardonnay. It's generally always red. Cote Chalonnais, so down towards Mâconnais, but not quite as far south, because that is what I call the cheap seats, affectionately. But it is, being that bit further south, it's a little bit more warmer, a little more tropical fruit, one might expect.
That's so funny. Even just the nose is so different. So we tried this one before the podcast in your glasses, Quentin? Or like a very classic?
Maybe it's because it's in the different glass.
For me, it's the best region.
The Burgundy?
Oh, yeah. For me, white or red.
Value-wise?
Yeah. Because
really?
Is because I know I can get a Burgundy over £20. I know it's going to be good. It's insurance. That's it. I mean,
it's a fair point.
It's boring. It might sound boring,
no,
but
no,
it's
boring.
Insurance.
It's a low risk investment.
Exactly.
It's a blue chip.
That's it.
The only thing with Burgundy, I don't have that much fun because in all the other regions you can afford these bottles, but in Burgundy, at some point you're stuck because you can't really go above.
Beyond.
You know, it's too expensive. Although obviously you can always test things in testing, which is nice. But for me, it's more about getting this bottle for a nice dinner with my friends and enjoying with family.
Yeah, I feel like it's a special bottle.
Oh, it is.
Because of the price, but the
quality
as well.
Then if you go back to France, it's going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, completely.
And I mean, what's also scary is post-January, when the duty changes, anything higher percentage alcohol, every point of a percent will increase in
except
price.
Except beer.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's all right. Beer's gone down. We can keep drinking beer, people.
One P a pint.
But, you know, you're looking, if a wine is 14.5% and more and more are at 14.5%,
of course.
That's going to add, I think 15% would add £3 cost, like tax price. It's just, you know, it.
There's going to be a petition. Don't worry. We had
it's
a.
Really cool.
Has everyone's been putting their logs to their capsules into the post to our new minister?
Again, when I say that, I'm talking about living in London. Obviously, when you're going to France, most of the bottles are accessible because even if you're going to directly to the producer, usually they are very generous. They open a lot of bottles. You can test a lot of things. So it's very different. I'm just talking about if I want to do a dinner on Saturday in London.
But then that's where you need to gather some friends together.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, it is. It's really hard. And particularly anything with either a bit of age or when you get into Grand Cruise, there will often be an interesting, lesser-known Burgundy region on wine lists.
Yeah.
You can find good value.
Mm.
So things like the Salon that I talked about. Granted, it was a lot cheaper back then, but that wine is special. And it was slightly life-changing. It sounds like a bit of a... And also, I was a Margaux. So I did a 2005 sort of retrospective masterclass with Richard Bamfield last year, and we did some of the first growth 05s. And having been to Margaux itself and seen the cooperage and just see what they do, so one, you get the place and story, and the wine is, you go, oh, I get it now. But until you taste it, it's really hard to express or convey what those wines are.
Of course.
But yeah, is something worth 25 grand? I mean, if you've got a huge bucket of money and price is no object, but it's how do you value it? And that's a, I mean, it's such a subjective question.
No, of course.
I mean, there's an essay or three in there, I'm sure. When you, some of these become just, they're just being moved around the world for investment.
Yeah.
And they're not being drunk.
Yeah, FOMO.
For example, Jura is my favorite region. And since 5-6 years now, Jura is getting so expensive because same, there's not much stock. No, a lot of people are like, oh, this is nice. I'm ready to pay maybe £10 more for this bottle.
Yeah, because the production
is so low. Supply and demand.
Yeah.
And Jura, there is no expansion. It's a bit like...
You can't expand the mountain, can you?
Yeah, Cassis, also
in
Provence. Yeah. That is landlocked. Yeah. There's nowhere... You can't plant more. Yeah. So those prices will go up over time.
That's true.
Did you like the Mercury Blanc?
Very good.
Mercury Blanc was delicious.
Really easy, isn't it?
It's really good.
Supple.
And
creamy without being too creamy.
And it's
not
quite
too
long
fruity,
on the palates as well.
Huge persistence.
Yeah.
Persistence.
I think we should try the red now.
So now we're trying...
We are trying. So this is Emprimeur. This is a Clos de Fèves.
Emprimeur, okay.
Emprimeur, Boom Premier from Chanson.
From Chanson.
So that is their monopole. So it is just theirs.
So is Domaine Chanson like a family-run domain? Yeah.
I believe so. So Chanson is part of the Menzendorf group.
Part of the?
Menzendorf.
Okay.
Bollinger.
Yeah.
They actually are literally around the corner, their offices.
Okay.
Bermondsey. And you can always become a little bit skeptical, a little bit cynical, going, oh, you know, it's a group. But Vincent was here today talking about their Emprimeur, showing their Emprimeurs. And I have a lot of time for Chanson. I think they have some very good plots. There's a lot of care and love, and there is, it's still family based.
Group, for me personally, I don't really care if it's like a big group or not. I don't think it really affects the quality of the wine.
I think the issue that I have when you have big groups, and this doesn't, I don't put Chanson in this, but when you have a large group that is, then they have much greater distribution and you start to see it everywhere. Mm. And then you start to do some price comparisons and then you start seeing it in a supermarket. And then you start to roll down this sort of slippery slope, which I start to get a little bit grumpy about.
Maybe that's the thing. It's probably also when you start to see the wine in the supermarkets, like here, for example, Whispering Angel or this thing, which is not that bad. I feel like Whispering Angel is good. It's just now it's everywhere.
But the problem is when you see it, you know, on promotion for £12 and you see it on a wine list at £80+, you know, this
that's
becomes... Then you've got to say to them, where are you putting your... What's your intention for the wine? Are you just trying to flog booze? Or do you see this as a certain value point?
Yeah.
Because when you start promoting it that, you know, it's one is what the cost of the wine is, how much volume, and their volume has increased significantly over the last 10 plus years. But you're undermining the value of the inherent value of the brand because it becomes, you know, the irony is it becomes more accessible. But as a result of that, you don't want to drink it so much because it's when you see it, you know, £80 or £100 on a wine list, and it's
completely. And also, people tend to always look at the label, but it's important to look at what's inside the bottle because the label is always going to stay the same, whatever, most of the time. But the liquid inside can change like every year, and it can change dramatically in 4 or 5 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And where that fruit comes from, because it's not always domain grown. It's not all from a single vineyard or multiple owned vineyards. It's all bought. A lot of it's bought in fruit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe it's bon premier cru.
Yeah.
Monopole.
Delicious. Really pretty, juicy, bright, red berries. Dare I say it's almost New World. It's super accessible.
Maybe you wanna. Do you wanna explain, like, for example, if you have a bon and a bon premier cru, what's the difference? Why do we call it premier cru?
So you've got different categories within in many different regions across the globe. But so in if we're talking bone versus premier cru, this is talking about quality. So this is site specific. So village or village is a more general level. It'll often be lower within the region, so as in lower altitude, whereas the premier crus will be higher elevation, so a couple of hundred meters above sea level. They will be... They can only be premier cru if they've been designated that. So it's because of the site, the soil, the terroir, as I said. So it's the microclimate that gives it a unique characteristic. Whereas if it is just a straight bone, it can come from a much greater area and be more, it'll just give a typicity. But what happens when you go into a Premier Cru is more specific to that particular area. I think I've done.
That's a perfect definition of a Premier Cru. Perfect.
There is more discussion to be done here. Oh my God, I'm sure we can tackle more subjects and we can drink more wine as well together.
Now I've brought wine.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming again. And I hope it hasn't been too long for the listeners, but I'm pretty sure there's so much to learn about it. I think we really tackled some essential about wine, and how to serve it, so, you know, regions, I mean, even the whole shebang.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm sure I've upset a few people, but at the same time, I think it's important to at least open the discussion.
Challenge and debate.
Yeah. We don't have to be all agree, we just have to accept what other people think.
But I think it's good to be mindful and aware of it.
Completely. Of course.
And that's how it should be.
And again, it's a chat, you know.
So, hey guys, if you really enjoyed this episode, don't forget to give us a little like and a five-star rating.
Five-star.
On Spotify.
And Apple Podcast.
And Apple Podcast.
And in the meantime, or until next, happy Christmas.
Oh, yeah, happy and Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you very much for listening.
And we'll see you next week for the next episode.
Take care.
Cheers. The Hospitality Podcast.